Hello, my name is Robert J. Rosenthal. I'm the managing editor at the San Francisco Chronicle, and you are listening to a podcast from the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah, I love that. That was incredibly corny. Let's go with that. That's a great theme song.
And it still is. This is not a podcast from the San Francisco Chronicle. It is a podcast from the incomparable Tim Goodman's TV Talk Machine, Volume 4, Episode 201. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, everything else changes, but he remains the same. Tim Goodman, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter. Hello.
Oh, you're killing me. Oh my god, I love that. That's corny. Let's go with it. That's perfect.
Yeah, the first thing on the first episode of the TVTM is a comment about the theme song, which Benny was playing live. And you just laugh at it, and I find it funny that it remains the theme song because it's just so good. It's called breaking broadcast news short is the name of it. It's very catchy.
It's very it gave you the impression, well, the false impression back in those days that you were going to actually get some good news.
Yeah. Get some
and good, like informative information. So, you could use.
Mm-hmm. So we have some information about the old podcast that I'll share later on.
Okay.
So we'll go back in time later for people who are either, OG listeners or are curious about that era. But first off, we should talk about real stuff. Although I can use a sound effect from the old podcast and say breaking. The Golden Globes were released. It is an award program by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, in which television shows and movies are given awards. For those who don't know what the Golden Globes is, and so you wrote, remember last week, all exposure is good exposure. It's just good to have these things out there. Some fascinating choices they made, but hey, the Americans won the Golden Globe for Best Drama.
It's stunning. I can't believe that. I actually saw that when our good friend Moises actually posted something on Twitter saying, "Wake up, bastard machine!" They gave it to the Americans.
Yeah,
because I wasn't watching. I did not watch the show.
No, my daughter wanted to watch it, and so my wife was watching it with her, and I just was like, "I got to do something else. I can't." I had to do something else. But hey, the Americans won an award in its last season. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Sandra Oh won for Killing Eve, which I think is a great choice.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I am a little bit baffled by the choice of Rob Stark, Richard Madden from Bodyguard, winning Best Actor in a Drama, because I haven't seen all of Bodyguard. I've only seen some of it. But I mean, I guess he's tense all the time. But
he's very tense all the time.
Not sure I love that performance. I think it's fine, but that was a weird choice.
He loosens up a little bit later when things, I should say, get much more crazy.
When things change.
Yeah. On Bodyguard. But Bodyguard was a huge hit in Britain, so maybe that's partly why.
And, okay, the Kaminsky Method, which I tried to explain. This is a Netflix comedy. I tried to explain this to my wife, and I said, this was Netflix basically saying, okay, Chuck Lorre, what if you can't do a multi-camera sitcom? Mm-hmm. And this is, and he's like, well, I guess I'll hire Adam Arkin and, or Alan Arkin and Michael Douglas, and we'll make a multi-cam, or, you know, we'll make a single-cam sitcom instead on Netflix. And it won Best Comedy, and Michael Douglas won, I think, less surprising because the Golden Globes loves stars.
Yeah, and Michael Douglas in particular.
Movie stars, mm-hmm, and Michael Douglas and all of that. But I was surprised because nobody, I think, had the Kaminsky Method on their list of the very best comedies on television.
No, and it does circle back to the whole point of, like, nobody has the Golden Globes on their list of things where we should actually be taking them seriously about their TV picks, right?
That's fair. That's fair. But still, Rachel Brosnahan for Mrs. Maisel won Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy. She's good. She's very good. I'm not going to complain with that. I love her in that. Assassination of Gianni Versace won for a miniseries. I haven't seen it, but I heard good things about it. So, okay.
Yeah, I've never seen it either, and I don't know how long it's going to take me ever to go back and watch it. So that's a tough one. That falls in the category of, I didn't do that.
Yeah, and Darren Criss won for his performance in that as well. I did also added some color as I was moving back and forth between rooms trying to avoid the Golden Globes in explaining when Patricia Arquette won. I had to explain that, Tim actually said, that's a really great performance, off-putting, but brilliant. And the Hollywood Foreign Press agreed.
They did, and they gave it to her. Yeah, it was off-putting. I'm still scarred by it. Mm-hmm.
And a big thumbs up to Ben Whishaw for A Very English Scandal. I thought that was great that won something. It was nice. He gave the whole, you know, his speech was really good. It was a good performance, and it was a, I'm glad to see him credit his writer and director and co-stars and all of that. And that was one that made me happy to see that one get
honored. He's wonderful.
He's so good.
And as we've said many times, people should go do that. I was also happy to hear that Holly Taylor from the Americans won, so that's nice.
Right. All right. Well, so anyway, the Golden Globes happened. There they are.
It happened.
It mm-hmm. happened. You know, whether we watch it or not, they happen.
Well, whether we wanted it to happen or not.
Yeah. So let's talk about new stuff. You've got three reviews of new things because, you know, it's let's do the math here, Tim. 500 scripted shows a year, roughly. That means 52 weeks a year. That means there are almost 10 scripted shows premiering every week.
Yeah, it's nutty, and we're definitely going to break 500 this year for sure. In fact, I think the idea is we could be like 520 or more.
Well, I mean, Apple alone will, you know, come from zero, and Apple and Disney will both be turning on streaming services that did not previously exist. So
and Warner Media,
Media, yeah, mm-hmm. that's right.
So a little fourth quarter push in 2019. When we're all super exhausted.
When we are, my friends who do a tech podcast called Accidental Tech Podcast this week, one of them had a revelation where they're like, wow, there's a lot of TV shows. And I just started laughing. I'm like, oh, I got a podcast for you to listen to where we complain about how many shows there are every single week. There are a lot of TV shows. It turns out, three of which you reviewed this week. So, Informer, tell me about Informer. This sounds, I was really excited to hear about this because this is sort of like, what if you did Bodyguard and like maybe had it have a little more kind of, I don't know, more depth, more complexity, or seasoning or something. So tell me about it. I'm excited about this one.
They put two, it's funny. They put both of my reviews. I wish they hadn't. I hope they never do that again. Put both of them up on the same day. And, also had them both up before like 8 o'clock in the morning or by 8 o'clock in the morning. And then completely washed off the page, and forever lost yesterday. And it's hard enough to keep track of shows, much less like, find these reviews.
Listeners to this podcast know that you can always click on sites in the navigation of the Hollywood Reporter and go to Bastard Machine.
I love that about our listeners because I'm not sure anyone else in the world is clicking on the sites part of the Hollywood Reporter site to find television. Mm-hmm. We do know to get there. So Informer is the better of the two that are out. You can watch Informer right now on Amazon. It's really good. It is another show that is sort of galvanizing the British audience, probably not to the same level in numbers that Bodyguard did, but it's a better series than Bodyguard because it's a little less implausible, even though there are some implausible moments in it. And I think it just starts out so quickly and it never pauses. And it actually has two really, really impressive newcomers. But basically the gist is that a counterterrorism unit in England, there's a guy, the actress Patty Considine, you might know him from Peaky Blinders, and he basically turns people as informants, and then he tries to get information, and they're trying to just work their way up from the ground to try to stop terrorism in London, which of course is a big issue. And in the course of this, he has a new younger a partner. A little troubling in the casting. She's good, but she's, Belle Powley is her name. She looks like she's 16. I'm troubled by that because you never really feel like she just shouldn't be there. She doesn't have the sort of gravitas to pull it off, but she does really excellent at playing somebody who's on this, on the spectrum. And that keeps you interested. But anyway, she's tasked with finding someone new, to be an informer. And at the same time, in a short order, the main informer that they have as partners dies. And so we are then, thrown back and we're shown this Pakistani guy named Raza, who is, by the way, he's fantastic. And so Raza is, the actor's fantastic, but Raza is just kind of, if anything, like very low level. We've only seen him take one thing, and it's almost out of spite when he's sort of being played by these, I would say, I don't know, posers. So he, at worst, he's living a hard scrabble life, staying out of trouble. And then he and his girlfriend go to a club and she has a bad reaction to some drugs and she goes to the hospital. He brings her to the hospital and he gets arrested. And so they use him as the one who eventually turns into the informer. And that's how the whole thing takes off. It's only six episodes. It rockets there. I'm going to mispronounce his name, but, the actor's name is Naban Rizwan, and he is, this is his first TV series, and he is, first of all, he's a really good-looking guy, he's super magnetic, and I'm sure this is not his first acting part, but this is his first major TV role, his first only TV role. I think he's done some stage. He's really good. The series Informer digs up, in addition to Patty Considine, who's done many shows, including Peaky Blinders, they dig up a number of really interesting actors in this cast. I'm going to butcher this name too, but there's a character, and his name, and the actor's name is Roger Jean Nessin Guyumba, and he's amazing. And they're both really good together. So you have these three actors who really hold this thing together. And it's this nonstop tense building thing where they're trying to get closer to this informant and maybe break down a terrorism ring. But at the base of it is all the stuff about racism, classism, immigration, terrorism. It's all put in there in this like twisty formula. It's really, really compelling. And I would tell people to go watch that right away. In fact, I would just say that I put that out there and people have already started to find it on Amazon and they're raving about it. And they're saying, oh, thank you for turning us on to that.
Amazon, people should check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so good. That's a good one. Black Monday on
It's not a good one.
Showtime, not a good one.
Not it? A good one. It's really unfortunate because it's such a waste of talent. I mean, you've got Don Cheadle, you've got Andrew Rannells. People remember him from Girls. You got Regina Hall. She's amazing. She gives maybe the best performance of all three of them. Don Cheadle, he's a great actor. You give him material, he's going to work. I think what this is, Jason, the best way I can describe this is that two people had a deal with a channel, and they made a pilot, and it wasn't quite working. It got put in turnaround and they probably had other things to do. And then with some tweaks and twists, including the fact that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg were the directors for the pilot, they basically said, okay, let's just reconfigure it this way and we'll make it. It seems very rushed, but it was basically like people are in a deal. They wrote a show. It didn't work out. It got put into turnaround. And people like the idea, so they just said, people at Showtime like the idea, so let's just change this, this, and this, and then we'll go with it. Because we have all these major stars attached to it. And it's just a patched-together mess. It's about the 1989 crash on Wall Street, and none of it's believable. It is a tonal mess between comedy, inappropriate comedy, drama and storytelling. It doesn't know what they have no idea what they're trying to do. And there's just too many cooks in the kitchen. And how they wasted all that talent is beyond me.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
So our next up show, this is very exciting because this is our friend Stephanie at Nat Geo sent me screeners, and you got the preview link for Valley of the Boom, which is their show about Silicon Valley. And in classic TVTM fashion, I haven't watched it yet. I've got it right here. It's sitting here ready to go, but I haven't watched it yet. Have you seen Valley of the Boom, Tim? Please say yes for Stephanie's sake.
Yes, Stephanie will be happy to know that not only have I seen Valley of the Boom, I really like Valley of the Boom. It's a very positive review that will be up soon on the THR site. And I think that like what's really good about it is that they finally found a way to accurately do this conceptual storytelling that they started with Mars. If anybody ever watched Mars, Nat Geo really did this thing where they would do scripted drama and then intercut it with basically documentary style interviews. You know, they were talking with, you know, physicists and scientists about what it's like to land on Mars, intercut with an actual fictional story of life on Mars. And it's different and it doesn't always work. They got two seasons out of it. Mm-hmm. I think it was partly interesting when they were doing it, the fictional part. And then it was like, oh, and now we're going to have in the middle of this scene, a bunch of people talk about it into the camera who are scientists. And that really struggled with that. And I think they started to make parts of it work, but as a whole, it didn't work. Now here it totally works because, Matthew Carnahan, he has, I think, figured out how to make this formula work. And what it is they wanted to do a story about the beginning of the tech world, so going back into the early 90s. And, people may remember Carnahan because he did House of Lies on Showtime, which is also stars Don Cheadle, who was excellent in that role. Until the story, you know, that they let that typical Showtime, they let that story go on too long. But Matthew Carnahan did a great job on House of Lies. And he did a thing there. If people were House of Lies fans or they remember that series, they'll remember that one of the things that they did is he would freeze characters. They would actually not freeze. They would be actors like pretending to stop moving. You mm-hmm. could still see them breathing and everything. And then they would have Don Cheadle break out and start doing a monologue and saying, okay, here's what's happening here, while everybody's frozen. And he would do this riff as he talked to the camera and broke the fourth wall. And then he would go back to it and everybody would come to life. Well, that is working in here as well. But I think what Matthew Carnahan did is when he went to Nat Geo, or they came to him, he basically said, let me just go bananas and don't mess with me and I'll give you something good. And it appears like they said yes. So what he does is he takes that formula where you're telling a fictional story and you also have everybody from Ariana Huffington to everybody from Netscape,
It's like Steve Case, who founded AOL, Mark Cuban, who of course became a billionaire because he got his startup broadcast.com bought, Jim Barksdale from Netscape.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Gooden, the tech reporter, mm-hmm. All sorts of interesting people involved in this.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because they take a three-story approach to it. It's also very funny because when they couldn't get something, they made fun of it. Like they couldn't get Mark Andreessen to actually go and be the real person talking head while his actor was the, you know, like Barksdale is there. He's talking. James Barksdale's talking. And Bradley Whitford is James Barksdale. So he's there too. And Bradley Whitford is really good. But Andreessen wasn't going to do it. So they very cleverly have the actor who plays Mark Andreessen start doing an interview into the camera like he's real. And then he's like, oh, right. You've already seen me as the fictional Mark Andreessen. He's kind of busy and like, he's not going to do this. So I'm going to play both roles. Okay, good. Let's go. And like, and later they want to do this thing where they have obviously if people follow this, you obviously know this, you know, Netscape was this, amazing browser.
It was the first major, like, widely used web browser. And then, you know, obviously Microsoft kind of came in and killed it with Internet Explorer.
Right. And that's the first major story. And it took a while for Microsoft to come in. But when they come in, they're going to come in hard, obviously. But instead of having, trying to go after, players there, for example, they have a puppet instead. So, you know, like those things. And then, like, when they're at one point, they're trying to explain the different, like, what was going on at the time, 1994. Netscape is this amazing browser that every that's like about to blow up on its first IPO, the tech IPO that changed all IPOs. And what's the history with Microsoft? And instead of like explaining it or dramatizing it, they have an actor, Lamorne Morris. He's been in a bunch of comedies, and he plays a character who constantly breaks the fourth wall here. He starts off as a stockbroker when Netscape is going to go public, and he's talking to the screen. And then he becomes basically a multidimensional character. He represents like all agents and all stockbrokers. He pops up in San Francisco and in New York, and he's basically winking like, yeah, I'm the same guy, but I'm representing other stockbrokers. But it's me, and I'm talking to you again. And it's totally out of the blue, and it's kind of funny. But Lamorne Morris basically says at one point, okay, wait, we could actually just show you dramatically and tell you what the backstory was between this. But let's do an old school 1990s rap fight. And so they have two rappers come in, and one raps for Netscape and one raps for Microsoft, and gives you the background on both characters. And like, if you're not into that thing, this is not the show for you, because it does this all the time. But what I think happens is that irreverent style that Carnahan brings in makes the times when they stop and they cut to the real James Barksdale or the real Mark Cuban, or they talk to these people who really lived it, and they get to that documentary style. That seems much less jarring, because you already have all this crazy rule breaking in your storytelling already. And it ends up being just fun. And the story, as you well know, and as anybody who even has a cursory knowledge of sort of what it was like in 1993 and 4 and 5, it's kind of nutball. So, and it's really interesting. And so it's hard to not make that a good story. And so they tackle three things. They tackle Netscape versus Microsoft, which is the start of it. Mm-hmm. They tackle how the globe.com was basically Facebook before Facebook. And they have the two globe.com guys who were, working, they were Cornell students when it happened. And then I didn't know about this character, but they bring up this fiction.
This is the Pixelon thing, which is like the streaming video startup that turned out to be run by a con man.
Yes. In fact, he went by the name Michael Fain, but he actually it wasn't his real name. So he actually has another name, and Steve Zahn plays him. And it's a true life story that is so over the top and so ridiculous. And people who, these tech reporters explaining, having interviewed this Michael Fain character, they're like, it's really impossible to tell you what this person was and not have you believe me. And so, Steve Zahn takes this role and just totally rolls with it, because it is a nutball true life story that basically gets to the point where he's stolen a bunch of stuff. He doesn't actually know how to do streaming video. He barely knows how to even like turn a computer on. But he manages to start this or create this company that gets all these investors involved. And of course, Mark Cuban, who did make a lot of money in streaming video, is there to be the talking head who says, yeah, this is kind of nutty, but this is very indicative of what 1994 was like, because after the Netscape stock went, to $3 billion, or, the company was valued at $3 billion at one point, everybody wanted in, and they were not doing their due diligence on what this quote internet was all about. And they actually have a great line where the Mark Andreessen character goes, he's so disappointed after one of these meetings. He's like, these guys don't even know that the internet is the internet. They don't, and it's true. It's something he said. He's like, people don't know what the internet is. It's just like when the guys who were at theglobe.com, when they watching them fictionally try to explain to an investor what social media is and a social network is, it's really funny, because you have to put yourself back there when there was no Facebook and nobody was doing social stuff. And you have these two college students trying to tell an older guy with a tie who they need money from. He can't see it. He can't see a product. He's like, wait, you're just talking to people in rooms, you know, and they need like $5 million from this guy. So it's very interesting to, and then you have the two real guys from theglobe.com, you know, now much older, talking about what it was like to be out of their element and like say, okay, we're trying to explain that we don't want to charge anyone to subscribe to it. And once we get this community up and running, I don't know, we'll figure out a way to monetize it. And it's actually really funny, even in 2018, because you can see how back in 1995, you felt like a snake oil salesman. And so the three of those stories were all put together at the same time. And I just found it really fun. It's just a fun way to tell a story that's familiar to a lot of people, but probably not for everybody.
Cool. I will check it out. And I'll report back because it is right up my alley. But it's good to hear about that. All right, we've got more, but let's take a break because we got a sponsor. How about that?
Ooh, lovely.
It's true. It is our friends at Simple Contacts. Again, you probably have a lot of things that take time. You got jobs, you got side projects. Maybe you play a video game, you watch a lot of television. I think maybe our listeners watch a lot of television. what you don't want to do is spend time reordering your contact lenses because that is boring. Simple Contacts lets you renew your prescription and reorder your contacts online. You can do it from anywhere in just minutes. They've got a self-guided vision test. It takes about 5 minutes, way faster than going to the doctor's office. And it happens on your iPhone, which is pretty cool too, or other devices. A licensed doctor reviews every test. You can skip the office visit, but not the care. It's not a replacement for a periodic full eye health exam. This is all about reordering your existing contacts on your existing prescription. They can check your prescription, make sure that you still see 20/20, and then they renew your lenses based on that prescription. They're not writing new prescriptions or examining your eye health. I tried this out. Like I said, a very clever app. It actually has a little person, talks to you, steps you through it, has you read essentially an eye chart with your contacts in from a distance. It detects your distance. I don't know how it does that, but it does that. It's like how small you are in the camera. I don't know. And then you read and it checks you out and makes sure that you're reading the letters correctly to go see 20/20, because that's the key here, is they want to renew your existing prescription. So super easy and kind of fun. And they've got a little virtual assistant who talks to you and tells you what to do. Very nice and simple. And then they have all the brands and lens types you're already familiar with. I have a very weird set of contact lenses that I've used, and they had them. You know, they're just there. It was just fine. The vision test costs $20. The prices of the contact lenses are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free, and we have a special offer for TV Talk Machine listeners. Join the thousands of people who have rated Simple Contacts 5 stars in the App Store and get $20 off your contacts by going to simplecontacts.com/TVTM. Use the code TVTM. That's all you have to do. simplecontacts.com/TVTM and use the code TVTM. You'll get $20 off. Thank you to Simple Contacts for supporting the TV Talk Machine.
Very nice.
You can see clearly.
I like it. 5 stars.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You can do startups trying to disrupt things, and then people say, how do you make your money? And it's like, well, we're disrupting boring refills of contact lenses.
Yeah, like who knew that was ever going to happen?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
See?
Exactly.
Technology changes, man.
So I wanted to do a little diversion here. I wanted to tell people about what I did this week. That was...
including me, which, by the way, people should know, you have not told me.
What was wrong with me that I did this? We got all nostalgic last week a little bit, and Joe Garofoli, question boy from the original TV Talk Machine, sent in his little best wishes on our 200th episode that he hasn't listened to any of them. That was very nice of Joe.
Yes.
And it got me thinking, because I realized while we were talking last week that although I saved off all of the MP3s from the old TV Talk Machine in case they got deleted by the Chronicle, which I checked, they actually are still there. There's no RSS feed anymore, so you can't subscribe to the podcast, but you can, if you do the right search, they have a blogs.sfk.com that's still there. I think the last TVTM is literally the last thing that was posted on it. but it is there. But years ago, I downloaded all the MP3s and put them up somewhere, and that all broke, and so they were gone. And I decided, as a part of our anniversary festivities, could I get those episodes back up, which I did. And then I thought to myself, Well, if I'm going to do that, I should probably put it in a podcast feed so that if people wanted to listen to those old episodes, they wouldn't have to just go on a website and click play. They could subscribe to like a feed that would have all of the old episodes in it in their podcast player of choice.
Wow.
And I did that. I did that last week, this last week.
You are insane.
I put that together. So if you go to theincomparable.com/TVTM and click on the About This Show link, or you can just go to theincomparable.com/TVTM/about. It's got links to all of those MP3 files, but at the top it'll say if you'd like to listen to the OG TV Talk Machine as a podcast, you can, and it's got the URL that you have to kind of copy and paste into your podcast player of choice. It's not in iTunes per se, but any podcast app will let you put in a like add feed URL button somewhere where you can paste it in, and then you'll get it, and it's got all of them in there. I had the name of the episode, the running time, the day it was posted. But what I didn't have was any of the descriptions of what happens in those episodes. So I went back and I found between the Bastard Machine blog and the TV Talk Machine pages on SF Gate, I found descriptions for every episode, and
I put
all of those in there too. So if your podcast player has a search function and you want to search for, as somebody suggested, like a porno Putin.
Porno Putin. Yes.
You can search for it and you mm-hmm. will, yes, indeed, find, or existential French woman. You will find mm-hmm. references in there. And one of the things that made me laugh, Tim, you remember back to these days. You think back to 10, 15 years ago. That was during the height of that Bastard Machine blog on the Chronicles website, where you were posting, like, there was a period in there where you were posting multiple items a day. You had the Spoiled Bastard recaps about TV shows. It was just so much. And very clearly, one of the things that you wanted to do was every time there was a new TVTM, that gave you another post you could get out on your blog.
Yeah.
What I learned from reading those, and also then from reading the ones that your producers would post over on just to get the podcast posted, Benny, and then later Justin, and later Ali, the greatest, there are only so many ways you can say, here is a new podcast with Tim and Joe. And yours are great because they would write like two lines and give up. You, in that blogger mode that you were in at that point, you'd write like four paragraphs explaining why the show was kind of pointless and nothing really happens in it. I have to say, I really kind of kept growing in admiration for you as I read these things, because it's like, how many different ways can one man describe the same podcast over and over again? And it becomes this kind of like descent into madness.
That I do remember.
Where it's just like, I mean, by the end, it's like, we don't know why you're here. Every blurb ends with enjoy in quotation marks, because there's a strong implication that you will not enjoy it. It is kind of a laugh. So if people do go back and listen, I recommend that you you look at like the little show write-up that wherever that is in your podcast player too, because I transferred those over. Nobody from Hearst find me. It's all in good fun, and you guys weren't hosting it, so I decided to host it. But it was a lot of fun, and I had forgotten, like, I remember some of the characters, but there are more characters. I forgot that you did the whole thing where you tried out a bunch of question girls to replace Joe, including Gerlina and Sherry from the Vale. There's an extended riff on Planet Taldar, because Taldar was a guy who wrote in.
Who called in, too.
Yeah, and called in. And that's the other thing that I forgot, is that so many people called in. That's a thing we have not done on this podcast, is take phone calls. So I might have to find a way to rectify that, or MP3s, or some way for people to send in audio questions instead of just me reading the questions, because I'm way behind the 10-year-old podcast and 15-year-old podcast in that. I'm behind the times there.
Well, you know, one of the problems we ran into was that people who would call in were disturbed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, plus you had a lot of people who were angry because their newspapers were wet.
That was my fun. That was the funnest part. People would leave a message on our line about not getting their newspapers.
Yeah.
It really talked about how low we were on the chain, and that the fact that the Chronicle didn't even know we were like on the second floor, one floor below them, making this podcast. They didn't even really know you know, that we even had there was actually podcasting equipment. They didn't really know that. So it's kind of amazing.
Peter Hartlaub, who is still podcasting at the Chronicle to this day, he actually has the knobs, the Benny knobs,
that the mixer. Legendary knobs.
He actually found them, and they're still, I don't know if they're still in use because that's
it's
old.
It's like having an original Moog synthesizer.
It is. That's right. It's like retro now. It's got a warmer sound. You should plug it in and man the knobs and see what happens. But anyway, also several people did take a dip back into the archive, and they said that that they were amazed that that the show starts on the rails, which is true. It does. Like, it takes a little while for it to, I mean, Joe does voices really quickly, but you know, it is, I had forgotten that for a while, like a good, like Robert's Rules of Order meeting kind of thing, there was the TV related news section followed by the non TV related news section.
Yes.
And then at some point you switched to a pod cave where there was no oxygen and everybody just did voices, and that was different.
I love how you say it started on the rails.
Yes. I mean, it clearly went off the rails. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Also, there's I will say, for people who are not interested in listening to Joe's many voices, as everybody got a little taste of that at the end of last week's, there are a lot of interesting interviews in there. You interviewed Ken Burns multiple times. I found a Kurt Sutter interview that I actually was never numbered. It was like a TV talk machine, but it wasn't ever numbered. And so it was kind of like the lost episode. So I found that and I stuck that in there too. So you talked to a bunch of interesting people. People who've listened to those early episodes love the fact that like there's conversations about like streaming and over the top and like, are there too many TV shows and all those things. So, you know, nothing like looking at how 2007 foresaw the future of TV versus 2019.
Well, it's also kind of funny too, that that Kurt Sutter one, you know, Ollie, who was the greatest, and he was, of course, the greatest. He was our third. We went through producers, like, as we said.
Spinal Tap
said,
drummers, yeah.
Spinal Tap drummers. We killed them all, but they're all still alive.
Yes.
But Ollie is now at CSNB Area, and he's been doing a lot of, he's switched over there, and he's been doing a lot of posts that are both related to all sports, not just, like, Warriors, but Giants and all that stuff, and 49ers, I think, too. So he's had his career going over there. I think, I don't want to lay this on him, but I think somebody was, or it could have been a random fill-in, somebody was the producer of that one with Kurt Sutter, and all the sound was terrible. And we went, I think I talked to him for like an hour and a half. He was very generous. And a lot of it had to be basically redone. And I'm not sure if it was Ollie or somebody else went in there and spent hours trying to fix and salvage some of the sound to get that. But yeah, we had, I don't know because you know, I did Ricky Gervais, Ken Burns, tons of people, Conan.
And my favorite, which is David Duchovny, while he's awaiting word whether his house is going to burn down.
Yes.
In a wildfire.
Right. And he was looking out a window, basically. Yeah. It's thinking the fire was coming to, I don't know if he was actually in his home, which was weird.
While he was talking about Californication.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah. So there are a lot of, Vince Gilligan talking about Breaking Bad.
Yep, Vince Gilligan. And then we actually had, you know, we had Mitch Hurwitz came in. He actually came into the San Francisco Chronicle. Ken Burns came in.
Yes, he did.
We had a lot of people
saved,
actually came
saved
in.
His water bottle.
We did.
it was quite a little quotidian moment.
Yes.
And that's all in there, along with Angry Regis and Crazy Dora and Bars and Question Boy and all of those other things. So there's a lot of, I will point out that your reference to it wearing a shorty robe was literally 30 seconds into episode one. So I'm not sure it really did start on the rails. I think maybe it had the illusion of being on the rails.
Yes.
But it was not ever actually. It was hovering slightly over the rails, then.
I will say this. My girlfriend, who was not around for any of that at the beginning, thankfully, but does listen to this one, and its professionalism. she listened to that and said she was dying laughing, but didn't know why she was dying laughing at Joe's voices. And I was like, well, that was kind of the beauty of it. You don't know why he's talking like that. And she's like, is that, what was the one? She's like, it's like Bill Walton. And I'm like, yeah, it was like, You know, it's whenever his son, Luke Walton, who coached the Warriors, because he's a big Warriors fan, is like, that's his dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it was all this stuff. And she was like, what is any of that really? But she thought it was very funny. And I was like, well, it was for a long time. And but then it became like so in of itself, it, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, literally, by the time you can't, I would defy anybody to listen to those late episodes and make any sense of it, right?
No,
because it ate its own tail at that point. And then you left the Chronicle, which is a long 2010 is when you left the Chronicle, right?
Yes, it's amazing. So long ago,
so a very long time now. So that was there was no real farewell. It was sort of like, well, we'll be back in a week or two, and then there was never any more. And a year later, we did the little reunion casts and stuff. But it's there if people want to dip in the archives and chuckle a little bit about not only the voices and stuff, but like there's one of the first things that happens in the TV Talk Machine in like episode 6, 7, 8 is the Sopranos final season, which we're just talking now about the 20th anniversary of the Sopranos. And you know, Alan Sepinwall and Mads Aller Seitz came out with their book about it, where they interviewed David Chase and they did essays on every episode, and people are talking about it. I know you were talking about it on your Twitter feed about the best shows, best dramas of all time. And it's funny that this coincides with, just completely coincidentally, these early days of the TVTM, where it was really sort of like, what will HBO do after The Sopranos? And interesting, nobody picked Dragons, Tim. Nobody guessed,
right?
Dragons.
And you know what's...
And there's two episodes where people call in to complain about the blackout at the end of the last episode of The Sopranos.
It's crazy. And also, what we actually captured on tape there is that Dave Walker, a friend of mine, who was actually, this is, people don't believe this story, and I told Dave that I thought we had lost it ages ago. Dave Walker, who was a TV critic at the Times-Picayune in New Orleans and a friend of mine, we did a
Critics Roundtable.
Yeah, Critics Roundtable about The Sopranos, and we asked, how do you think it's going to end? And this is before it was ending. And Walker said, he literally said, I want it to, the camera just to shut off like you closed a window. It's unbelievable that this, he nailed it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh wow. And he remembered it too. He's like, yeah, no one remembers that I said that in public, but I don't think he wrote it. So yeah, but it's there. And then there's also like random things too. Like, you know, what people, we give, I think, a lot of information out on the current podcast now that we're at 201.
Yeah, I think so.
But there was a time when one of my ideas as a joke would be that instead of me actually having the answer to anything, we would call Amber
in Canada.
In Canada, because she was very earnest and she had a lot of answers. And she was, I met her on TV press tour. And she was lovely and funny and playing, because she's Canadian, would play along with the joke. I said, what if we called you and you just picked up and then you answered our questions that people called in because I didn't know the answer? And that became like a running shtick forever. So it was. A lot of history on that one.
Yeah. So it's there if people want to dig through it. As far as I can tell, Amber is still doing it. Still.
Oh yeah, she's got two kids now. She's still doing
in Toronto.
She's still doing her stuff. Oh, very funny.
And had a stint as the president of the TCA, no less.
She did, yes. And what's it now held by Dan Feinberg. See, it's a small world, flat circle.
It is. A flat circle. Oh, that's a reference. I get that reference. That was whatever happened to True Detective. They just did that one season and then it just never came back.
It never came back.
Well, so it was fun to walk through the archive and it's there. And it's just one of those things. I actually was thinking when I was putting the show notes from the Ricky Gervais interview in, like, that is that moment, because that's literally my two favorite podcasts that I, when I started listening to podcasts, were TV Talk Machine and the Ricky Gervais Show, which was with Carl Pilkington and Stephen Merchant. And I know he talked about it with you. And then Colin Murray from the BBC interviewed you for his podcast documentary. And then there are lots of references to Fighting Talk, which became one of my favorite podcasts,
oh,
and which
God.
I still listen
Colin
to.
Colin Murray's a genius.
He left the BBC, then he came back. He's doing Fighting Talk again. He's just so smart and so fast. And so that's in there too. And I'm like, it's also like a little time capsule of that first era of podcasts. And the other thing I didn't realize is I started my podcast essentially like a week, a month after the last TVTM at the Chronicle. That's when I started doing The Incomparable, was that same window. So it was, I wonder if subconsciously that was part of it, was like, you know, my, that podcast is, has stopped and I'm going to make my own. I don't know, but that was a long time ago now. That was,
it's crazy. It's, and I really appreciated last week on the 200th episode that you had this, that you put together the special thing, but that at the end, when you had the numbers, and the fact that we'd been around for 12 years, which blew my mind. I thought that was really nice. That made me feel, Joe's contributions were heartfelt, made me tear up and laugh. And, your effort in saving all that stuff is amazing. And, of course, this week you went over and above and dug all those back up and saved them and got show notes for them. So thank you for all of that.
Well, I was happy to do it. It was a labor of love. And it was, like I said, it was great to sort of see you try to figure out how to describe this thing as it got increasingly weird, to the point where you were finally like, look, it's here. Also, there's several things that I didn't put in the show notes that are very much like, we forgot to post this one, or this got posted but nobody told me. That happened several times, which is pretty funny too. So there's a bunch of great classic
some
items in
never
there.
Change,
no,
right?
It's true. It does. Mm-hmm. It happens. So anyway, I hope if people are curious, again, you can go to theincomparable.com/TVTM, and if you click the About This Show link, there's a little write up there that's got the URL in it, and you can subscribe, and there won't be any new episodes there, but all the old ones will be there, and you can just play them to your heart's content or not.
Well, somebody has done that. I forgot who it was. I saw somebody on Twitter had done that, and I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, and I would also be remiss, and in fact, I've been remiss since Christmas. I just want to throw this in. This is probably our Columbo moment in episode 201.
Nice.
But I would be remiss in saying that I through you, she sent them to you. I got a wonderful set of Russian postcards.
Oh, from listener Marina.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's a travel agency in New York and knows that I am a huge Americans fan. And by the way, if you thank you to Marina and all of those cards are, first of all, just graphic design wise, which I'm a huge fan of. And since I teach at CCA, I'm around amazing graphic designers in that art world. Those cards are wonderful. But if anybody follows me on Twitter, you'll notice that recently, yesterday, I retweeted a thing from the ATX Festival, which they turned into their own. You know, they have their own little podcast, mm-hmm. but they basically took. I hosted and moderated the panel at ATX Festival last summer about the Americans and the finale, and so we were able to talk about it. And how it ended. So if you've seen the Americans all the way through and you want to listen to that, you can find that not only at the ATX Festival site, but I retweeted it yesterday.
Yeah, I will put that, I'll put a link to that tweet in the show notes too, so people can check that out, because that'll be cool. And you know what we haven't even talked about, so we've done no letters, which is, you know, I think it's okay. I'm going to say we don't have a lot to do, so I'm going to save them because I think they're all on a theme. And okay. The theme is kind of about what you also tweeted about, which was that top five dramas of all time. And I feel like we've done enough for this episode, so I'm going to put those in the bag, and then maybe next time we can talk a little bit about how your thought process that you went into on Twitter a little bit about how you choose the top five, and we can go over the top five. And I think that'll be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, so, that was based on the Sopranos having their 20th
exactly. So we'll put that in the bag for next time, and I'll give the numbers as is tradition going way, way back. Our numbers, we don't have any phone numbers or anything like that, but you can email us podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. If you want to send an MP3 with your voice, go ahead, and we could try that and ask why your paper is wet. Sure. And you can also tweet at us at TVTM. Those are completely valid options. And we'll be back next week with 202, which is an excellent area code, as is 201. We're in a good area code period
these
20s. A lot of good area codes in here for people out there. But I think that's it. Until next time, Tim, unless you're going to Columbo me again.
No, I don't. Thank you, Jason, for all your work. And bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.